Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
For that logo on the side of your helmet and not the name on your back.
Yes, sir.
Because we know what it represents. It represents everybody here you see and everybody you can't that we've talked about. I'm here to strain with you, man. I swear to God, I'm here to strain with you. Let's go. Everything you got, strain with everything you got.
Let's go.
Let's go. Bills on three. One, two, three. Bills.
You're listening to the Off Tackle with John Fita Show with your host, Joe Miller.
Hello, this is the Off Tackle Show with John Fita. I'm the big O Jerry Ostrowski filling in tonight for Joe Miller. And as always, next to me, my man John Fita. And with us tonight, I'm fortunate that Joe's not here. He decided that he wanted to give me the pure joy of being able to introduce this man. He's been with NFL Films since 1979, and the one and only Greg Cosell joins us on the Off Tackle Show tonight. And I just have to ask you, Greg, you've been doing this professionally with NFL Films since 1979. What is it that keeps you excited about football? Like, what gets you up in the morning? What do you love about it?
Fascinated by that, by 22 moving players on every single play. And fortunately in my career, as it grew, I've been able to be around a lot of great coaches, players. I remember in 1998, Steve Sable came to me and said, you know, you need to be going to the scouting combine every year. And so I've been going to the scouting combine. So there my first couple of years, I can't do this anymore. I'm way too old. But my first couple of years, I'd stay out till 2-3 in the morning where all the coaches were out there, you know, drinking. And that's where you had the great conversations, you know. And I learned so much. I was very fortunate to get to know Bill Walsh pretty well. And he really taught me quarterback play. I still sort of follow the way he taught me quarterback play when I watch quarterbacks and then evaluate college quarterbacks. But he's just one of many, many, many through the years. Because I always take the approach that there's so much to learn. You know, I'm sure people would say I probably know a lot, and you know, but I always feel like there's more and more and more to learn. The game is evolving. The game is changing. You know how it is. You go out to dinner with a coach, and all he does is, you know, he takes the salt and pepper shaker, he moves it around. Hey, we're going to put this guy here. We're going to put that guy on. You know how it is. I mean, that's the way coaches are. For them, it's 24/7, 365. And I love the game like that. You know, I work. You know, people always say to me, guys, hey, I'd love your job, to have your job. And then I say, you probably would. I work 70 to 75 hours a week for like 8 months. Yeah. And then they say, maybe I don't want to do that, you know, but I just, you know, I mean, I've got, you can't see it now, but I've got a TV right here. I've got my remote, you know, and I've got all the tape in my computer. And, you know, I just love it. I mean, you learn something new every time you put on tape.
I have to ask, you still using the old cowboy remote like the old days, or they got you a new one?
It says cowboy remote right here. Yeah. Don't leave home without it, Jerry.
I love, you know, it's still the best remote ever invented for watching football.
Yeah.
But, you know, Greg, I got to ask, starting when you did in 79 and now you're still doing it in 2023, how has it been for you with the changes in football and the way – you know, as the old folk, and I guess you could say that John and I now are old folks, like to talk about how it used to be in the game of football.
Right, right.
Now that it's progressing to what it is now in such a, I don't want to say two-hand touch, but obviously a day and age where we're protecting players more and taking away a lot of the big defenseless hits, and offense is what everybody wants. How has that change been for you from 79 to 2023?
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple ways for me to answer that. One is as a fan, and the other is just in my job. You know, as a fan, you know, I think, and I've said this to people, you know, around here at Films, I mean, the worst feeling to have for me as a fan when I'm watching a game on Sunday is to feel like whenever I see a good play, am I waiting for a penalty flag? And I hate that feeling. You know, I just want to see the game played. And by the way, I don't want people to think that means I don't want players to be safe. I mean, that's not the point, you know. But, you know, you guys played, you know, it's a physical game. Some might even use the word violent, but, you know, let's use the word physical for now. It's a physical game. You know, I'm not saying that you want people to just smash into people when they're totally defenseless and hurt people. But, you know, as a fan, I just want to see. I was never one, even when I played sports, to worry about officials. You know, I just want the game to be played. Now, obviously, there's penalties, legit penalties, and the whole deal. But from now, more of a work perspective, it's been really interesting seeing the evolution of the game. Because when I started, as you guys know, the game was about running the football. I mean, running backs were taking number one in the draft. I remember my second year here, I believe it was George Rogers, who was the number one pick in the draft. I remember Billy Sims, who was one of my absolute favorite players out of Oklahoma. I mean, I just thought he was so, so special. And unfortunately, he got hurt with an ACL at a time when guys didn't come back from ACLs the way they do now. So the game was about running the ball. There was, you know, not a lot of three wide receiver sets. There was not a lot of shotgun. I mean, I remember talking to Steve Young, who I know well, and Steve would tell me, I didn't take one snap in the shotgun my whole career, you know. So, you know, as far as my work, you know, the evolution of the game, which I really enjoy, because to me, that's the intellectual and academic part of it. It's constantly changing. You constantly have more to learn. You constantly have more to study. So that part I really, really enjoy.
John, Greg, I want to dovetail on that. You know, you've been spending years and years studying film, watching the evolution of the game, and now with the with so much social media out there, so many pod vidcasts, everybody, I don't want to say everybody, but there are a lot of experts out there, self-taught, some of them who get it right and some of them who get it wrong quite a bit. And the nuance. So my basic question is it a benefit to the game to have this many eyes thinking they know what they see and describing it? Or do you find that to be a little bit tiresome, or do you not pay attention at all?
Look, the people that know me and work with me and know me well know that I am not one of those people that thinks I know it all. You know, as I said, I always think there's more and more to learn. But I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, I literally work 7 days a week studying tape, which doesn't make me brilliant or the smart. That's not my point. But this is what I do. I mean, I wasn't joking when I held up my, this is what I do. I sit here and I watch tape. I take detailed, copious notes of everything I do. I mean, you know, I have books of notes, you know. And like I said, I'm always wanting to learn more. So I know what I do. I don't know what others do, but yes, there are times when I'm on, you know, look, I have to be on Twitter. I have to be, because that's the nature of life right now, you know, for our profession anyway, for my profession. And there are times I see guys who maybe they're writers, maybe they, whatever they are, but they're not guys sitting in their basement in their underwear. They're guys in the business, you know what I'm saying? And I see them, you know, try to break down a play and I say, you know, you really just don't know. And I mean, it's not my job to police, you know, to police what they're doing.
No, you know, not at all.
That's not
at all.
My job at all. And the other thing that I always find really interesting is when, you know, younger guys who are trying to get into it and, you know, are trying to work hard and do it the right way. Maybe they're 25, 28 years old and they'll put up a play and they'll say, I've never seen this before. And I think to myself, you know, I've seen it 1,000 times, you know, because I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, as you guys probably know, there's very little that's brand new that no one's ever done. It's just how you get to certain things, you know, but there's very little that's never, ever been done before. You know, I was fortunate enough to do a book with Ron Jaworski years ago called The Games That Changed the Game. And we did 7 Sundays that changed the NFL. And one of them had to do with the San Diego Chargers in the 1960s with Sid Gilman, who was considered the, you know, the father of the modern day passing game. And so we did one of the AFL championship games where they beat the Patriots. You know, they killed them. And I remember I was able to get footage from the New England Sports Hall of Fame of some Patriots games. And it was coaching tape, believe it or not. They had coaching tape from 1963. And I'm watching this tape in my office, and I see a zone blitz. an exact zone blitz from 1963 that right. Dick LeBeau, who Dick LeBeau would be the first to tell you, he didn't create the zone blitz, by the way. But, you know, he made it famous. He made, you know, people think he created it. You guys know he didn't, but I'm seeing it, and it's 1963. So, you know, nothing is brand new under the sun, you know. So it's just how you get to things, how they look, you know, formation, you know, all that kind of stuff. You guys know all this. But, you know, football is, it's still a certain kind of game. And you know, anything that's played in confined space, there's not a thousand things you can do. There's confined space.
Right.
Greg Cosell joins us, obviously, from NFL Films. You might know him from his weekly stint on One Bills Live, and you can check him out every week. I think you're on Fridays, right?
Fridays at 2 Eastern time, yep.
Fridays at 2 Eastern time. And, Greg, I got to ask you, know, talking about the science of football and the way things are going, and we've talked about, you know, things of old showing up now and all that, you've seen probably more so than anybody, because you're in that production world, technology and how technology has changed the game of football, right? I don't like it, and probably because I'm 53 and I don't understand it like my son, who's a tight ends coach at Drake, does, and he gets they get all into it. But I look at this, and has analytics, is it ruining the game of football? Has it changed the game of football? Because you see guys nowadays like Mike McDaniel down in Miami, these you know, wonder kids that are so, you know, great on computers and technology, and they rely on analytics and these types of things. Has analytics, is it hurting the game of football, or is actually bringing a side to it that is refreshing and new and good for the game?
Well, Joe, the way I'd answer that is this. I think every coach, you can go back to Paul Brown, would want more information rather than less information. The question is, how do you apply that information?
Right.
And that's where I think different coaches apply it differently. I've had conversations with GMs and coaches that say, hey, some part of analytics I really like and I feel it helps me. Other parts have no bearing whatsoever on what I do to game plan and play on Sunday. So I think ultimately it's how you apply it. I think if it's blind and you just say, oh, analytics is everything, I don't think that's the best way to go. But if you figure out a way where it fits in your approach and how that impacts you in a given game, then I think it can be positive. I mean, to me, when you're playing in a game on Sunday, okay, and it's 4th and 2 at whatever yard line, and the so-called analytics tells you to go for it, that's based on things that have happened in the past, okay? Right. Analytics is results-based, not process-based. What I love about what I do is I love the part of being process-based. The results to me are the result. Hey, everybody's a genius when you have access to the results. That's easy. You know, I mean, but we love that about fans. They have access to the results and they're passionate. That's great. You know, but coaches, and again, I know they're paid to win. We get all that. But it's a process-based business for 6 days a week. Obviously, you play even through the game, and obviously you have a win or a loss, and if you have too many L's, you won't be coaching very long. We get that, and they get it too. But for the most part, it's a process-based business. You know, you're trying to figure out the best way to go about doing something that gets the most out of individuals and groups. You know, that to me is what you're trying to do. Is that fair, guys? You played. Isn't that fair?
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to do all week long.
Right.
Figure out, you know, you guys were offensive linemen. So all week long, with your O-line coach in particular, you're trying to figure out, hey, what's the best way to play against the defensive front we're going to play against? You know, what are the best run plays against this particular front? You know, how do we have to block this guy? Because you know what? He's a game wrecker, and he could ruin our game if we don't have a particular plan in place. You know, that's all process. You know, obviously you right. have to then go execute it on a Sunday and hope that the results are good. But I love the process of watching this and figuring it out. And that's why for me, I very often don't care who wins or loses these games. I just love the games.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the analytics because we see more 4th and 1, 4th and 2
yeah.
teams going for it. I'm not interested in seeing a lot of punts. For two reasons, right. It's boring. And secondly, when it's my team, I don't care where the punt returner goes. I'm just looking for a flag. I see a big play. Yeah. I look behind the play and I'm looking for flags
because that's what you get a lot. Yeah, you get a lot. Yeah, that's the concern. But getting to your point, Jer, I think analytics can be very good. I think it's how you apply it. I mean, you know, and there's probably, look, I'm not an expert on it by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm sure if there was an expert here, they would give me 20 different ways it can be used and deployed to help. I don't know all those 20 ways. All I know is that, you know, when you're in the middle of a game and it's fourth and two, you know, what happened 6 years ago, and I actually had a coach tell me this, so I'm just the messenger now, you know, what happened 6 years ago does not help me at all in deciding what I want to do on fourth and two in that moment.
Right. Greg, you know, that's just great commentary. You talked a lot about process. And I think people, the ones that say, oh, I want your job. And then you tell them you watch 72 hours of film a week, which I believe because I worked with you at NFL Films for a few days. And I think a lot of our listeners want to know why. What's the goal? Do you have a set of goals every week? Are you producing a show? Is the show change every week? Give us a little insight into what does that 72 hours become for us, the viewer? Where are you? Where do we see you?
Well, first of all, I've had many people tell me, and they're probably right, that I work more than I need to, but that's just me. I've always been like that. So what I do at NFL Films, I created a show called NFL Matchup in 1984. Yep. For years and years, I was the producer of it, but I felt in my role as producer, in order to work best with the on-air talent, as we like to call them, of which I guess I've become one of those now. I felt that I really had to learn the game through their eyes, you know, through the eyes of the coaching tape and through the, you know, really learn football in order to be able to have good conversations with the talent and have the best show possible as a producer, even though the words were not coming out of my mouth, you know. And then just in terms of intellectual curiosity, when 8 years after the show began, when we got the coaching tape, that for me was the Rosetta Stone. That's where, oh my God, now I can really learn the game. And now I not can I just have conversations, but now I can sit and watch the way the game is coached and taught and the way the players take it in. Now I can really learn this. And I would say for 3, 4, 5 years, you know, I didn't really know a whole lot. I mean, you know, and I'm still to this day learning, but at least now I can put on the tape and, you know, I pretty much can know what I'm looking at for the most part. But, you know, and then about, I think it was 6 years ago, I became on-air talent on my own show because of, you know, changes at ESPN. And I feel in order to do my job properly that I have to study as much tape as possible so I can have all the necessary information at my fingertips whenever I need it. Because unless you're watching this, you really don't know. I'm not a highlight guy, you know. Highlights lie. I mean, you can watch a highlight and, you know, any great plays by anybody and, you know, and that's easy. But I want to see how a team plays. What does a team do? You know, I've become more tactics and scheme based more than individual based. You know, I get calls every year from writers, you know, I'm doing my all pro team. Who's your left guard? And I'm like, you know, guys, I'm not really studying individual left guards. You know, I used to do more of that. I do that when I start doing my college work, but I don't in the NFL season. I love the tactics and the schemes of the game. But I also do, as you guys know, radio. You know, I do, I think, 4 or 5 local markets, including Buffalo. But I also do Colin Coward, which is national. I do Ross Tucker, which is national as well. You know, and they want to talk about everything. And you know, I just don't feel comfortable talking about it unless I've seen it. So, for instance, Buffalo, which obviously, you know, that's you guys are most concerned about that. You know, I have to watch their tape and their opponent's tape every week, or I do not feel comfortable going on with Brownie and Tasker. I just don't because, you know, and maybe the fan wouldn't know that at all if I didn't, you know, watch everything, but I would know it. And that's all that matters. I would know it. And, you know, I have to do it the right way for me.
That's your 72 hours a week right there, Greg.
You're
a machine.
Yeah.
Hey, who was the guy? Was it who was the guy that used to write the football Bible every year that Paul he passed away. He used to write.
Oh, Zimmerman, Dr. Z.
Dr. Z. So you're like a Dr. Z, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, except he wasn't watching tape, Jerry. So, yeah. I don't know if I just gave away a secret there.
That's a whole nother show.
Yeah. But Greg, go ahead, Jerry. You're up.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, one of the things I loved about NFL films as a kid was the personalities of the players that you showed. I remember as a kid, I one time for a birthday present or Christmas, I got SI from my parents. And one of the things I got was this tape called Crunch Course. And it's that tape where the, you know, Lawrence Taylor's, you know, stomping around the end zone, you know, we're going to play like a bunch of crazed dogs and have
some fun, all that.
And that was the thing I loved about NFL films. You built these personalities. John Madden was famous, but you guys took John Madden to another level, right?
Well, it's funny, Jerry, you say that because that was Ed Sable's vision from day one. He wanted to present football. He wanted to, in a sense, combine NFL football and Hollywood movie
making. Right.
That was really the plan when he thought of NFL films in 1963. So, you know, obviously I think we've succeeded in that. And I used to do, before I pretty much got into this almost exclusively because I love this, the X and O football, I used to make all those kinds of films too here at NFL Films. You know, but that's essentially what we are, you know, being presenting football in kind of a Hollywood movie making way. We're telling stories, and now you know we're on the field. I mean, back then it was almost like that newsreel footage. Remember, you'd see the high black and white footage. You know, all of a sudden, NFL Films, we have cameramen on the field, and you're seeing guys' facial expressions. I mean, there's a phenomenal shot that's famous to this day, and I'm sure if you saw it, maybe you'll even remember it with my description of it, of Dick Butkus sitting on the bench with his, you know, hands. You know, it's a very famous shot. You know, but you know,
the
back
tape
then,
on his fingers,
shots like that, you know, that's 1967, 68. No one did that back then,
you know, and
that's
and
incredible.
The part I was progressing to was, are the players nowadays, do you find those types of personalities? I mean, the last guy I can think of in the league really is Ray Lewis, and he's since his retired,
You got a lot of guys, Jerry. they all want to be stars, you know.
Greg, I remember when I visited you at NFL Films back a decade or two ago, whatever it was. There was always talk about uncovering old reel-to-reel film that people found in basements that they'd turn over to you guys, and you'd put them all on digital. Are you still seeing at least a flow of old films that had never before been seen?
You know, I'm not, John, to be honest, I'm not involved with that anymore, so I don't know if we do that. You know, it's funny, particularly during the season, this is kind of what I do, and it's, like I said, I work so many hours. We're actually doing more work than ever here at Films, which is a wonderful thing, and there's so many projects we have. I bet that 30% of them, I don't even know what they are just because I get so wrapped up in what I do. But, you know, I know that we have a deal, which, you know, it's public, so I'm not speaking out of school. We have a deal with actually a film studio in L.A., Skydance, which is Tom Cruise's film company. You know, they do all his movies, among other movies. So, you know, we do a lot of stuff now at a really, really high level. I mean, we have a mixing room here. So people that don't know what that is, you know, you have to put all the sound together, you know, in any show. It's like a movie, you know. I mean, people might think if you're in a room and you're watching a movie and the phone rings, it's really that phone. It's not that phone that's sitting right there. It's a sound effect, you know. You know, we have this mixing studio that is so big with so many, you know, buttons and the whole. I mean, we're basically, you know, we're a movie studio.
Production studio.
We're a real production
movie house.
Studio. Yeah.
So, Greg, I know we're bouncing around a lot, but there's just
No, it's great.
Well, we got about John, we got about 9 minutes.
I'm good. You can go.
I'd feel amiss if we didn't pick his brain a little bit about the current Buffalo Bills and maybe since he watches all this film all week long. Maybe he could teach you and I a little bit about what's going on with these Buffalo.
And at the same time, give our viewership something where they could start to learn to watch football. From, you know, how does Greg Cosell watch football? So let's hear about the Bills.
What do you got? Is there like a Buffalo Bills bar in Tulsa?
Yeah, there is actually.
Are you serious? There is?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there is. There is.
Is there one in Tucson?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow. You're probably in charge of it, aren't you?
No, I am not. I can't.
Hey, Greg, only when they pay him to come, then he's in.
Right. Hey, I'm probably like Jerry, man. Like if I'm watching a game and I got too many people around me asking questions and distracting me, I'm just kind of like, you know, when I'm watching, when you watch Owen play, right? When I watch Bruno play at UCLA, my son, I'm at the game. I don't hear anybody. I'm just focused. So go ahead, Greg.
UCLA?
Yeah, my son's at UCLA. Jerry's son's at Tulsa.
Son's a defensive end in Tulsa.
Oh, okay. And your son is there now, John, at UCLA?
Yep. Bruno is the starting left tackle at UCLA.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, I'll be watching, in a couple of weeks. It's usually about mid-January. And I actually watched some of them last year, but I'll be watching Latu, the pass rusher. And I guess they got another kid there, one of the Murphy brothers. He's a good
prospect. Gabriel.
You know, I actually like the kid, just as an aside, and I forget who drafted him, but he was drafted. I like the Grimes kid from UCLA last year, the guard.
John Grimes, yes.
I think his name was?
No, it's John.
Not Grimes.
He's at Arizona. He hurt his knee.
Is he at Arizona? I'll tell you in a sec. It began with a G, but I'll tell you in a sec. But I like
him. I'm blanking on his name. Mimi, do you remember his name? My daughter's in the comments there. My daughter comes on the show.
She does. She's a super fan.
Give me a sec. It was John, but I can't remember. John Gaines.
John Gaines. I'm blanking on him. He was Bruno's host on his visit, and I'm sitting there.
Yeah, I thought he was a good
player. He made a big impression.
Yeah, no, he's a good player. He's long, and he plays with good balance, and he plays really low. He's got a really good
I thought he had pretty light – just what you said, you would know more about the O-line position than I would, but I thought he had light feet and really good balance for – you know, I thought he could play in the league.
And he did until he hurt his knee, but he'll be back.
Yeah.
He'll be back.
But anyway, what were you guys – you want to know about the – what do you want to know about the Bills?
We're cautiously eliciting your opinion on our beloved Buffalo Bills.
Well, I think the Bills they're a frustrating team for me, and I'll tell you why. Josh Allen, to me, is one of the most exhilarating and frustrating players. And I'm not talking about the interceptions. That I've always believed that interceptions, you've got to look at each one as an individual play and not look at a number on each. So, you know, just the number is not a relevant statistic to me. But at his core, Josh Allen is not a precision player. Josh Allen is an instinct player.
I agree.
And he can do things, obviously. I said 3 years ago, and people who I will say this probably didn't know a whole lot about football, and even some that might have said, oh, you're crazy. I said 3 years ago he was the most physically gifted quarterback in football, which is not the same thing I would say to people saying he's the best quarterback in football, but he's the most physically gifted, okay? But he's not a precision player in a strict sense. So there's one thing that he does that I guarantee would drive you guys nuts, but it's just the way he plays, and my guess is it won't change. He leaves the pocket prematurely too often, and he leaves throws on the field. Now, can he then make a special play? Yes, he can, and some of his special plays are ridiculously special. But like I told you guys, I was taught by Bill Walsh, okay? And so when I'm watching a quarterback – and by the way, I've met Josh. I don't know if you guys have met him. He is a great kid. You know, we all know, like I said, how gifted he is. But, you know, there are a lot of quarterbacks growing up playing now who are better athletes than the guys, you know, going back years and years. And they've grown up playing from the time they were 10, 11, 12, where they were the best athlete on the field. And they could always do something with their legs. And, you know, we've seen Josh be great. But, you know, I would just love to see him at times just play with a little more precision, let the play work for him rather than trying to make the play. You know, let the play work for him. You know, there are times he gets himself in trouble with that. And, you know, but at the end of the day, when you look at what he can do, and the fact that I imagine if you're a teammate, you know, even an offensive lineman, you feel that you're never out of a game. They can always make that kind of play. And, you know, not being in the locker room, I'm not there, but I'm sure you guys could speak to that better than I could. I'm sure that's a tangible feeling that, hey, at any moment, our quarterback can do something incredibly special.
Yeah, so you nailed it, and right. I think that is the kiss me deadly with Josh Allen.
Yes,
right.
Great way to describe it.
We want him to. We're always looking for him to find the balance between the two, and I actually believe we're approaching that at this point under Joe Brady, which is different than Dorsey. But as an offensive lineman, you know, Jerry and I just watched the second half of the game today again. And, you know, in the second half of the show, when you leave us, everybody's going to be absolutely stunned when we don't tell them the offensive line was awful and we tell them why. Let me ask you this. Are the Bills overachievers or where they ought to be given the amount of injuries that they've been sustaining over the past 2 years?
It's interesting because I have felt over these last couple of years that overall they were not as gifted as their record. I mean, everybody said, man, they have super, super talent. And, you know, again, and I'm just speaking watching tape. So, you know, I don't want people to think, you know, for me, none of this is ever personal, you know.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. No. I mean, I thought that, quite frankly, guys, and you can speak to this better than I didn't think their offensive line, which I think's played better this year, but I thought in recent years their offensive line was really not that good for the most part. I thought other than Diggs, they really didn't have another consistent weapon on the perimeter. You know, Gabe Davis once in a while, but, you know, they didn't really have that second guy. And by the way, I think Diggs is great at what he is, but he's not a vertical dimension. You know, they don't really have that guy. Like, I would not put Diggs, and I hope that Buffalo fans listening to this are not going to, you know, shun me now, but I may even have said this on One Bills Live, but, I don't think Diggs is in the category of, let's say, the Jamar Chases or the Justin Jeffersons. I think he's great at what he is. What he is, to me, he's kind of the highest level possession type receiver you could be. That's what
he's
got
to take the top off of it, guy.
Yeah, he's not going to. Do you guys agree with me?
Oh, I agree.
100%. No, 100%. And nobody thinks you're personal. You're probably the fairest arbiter in describing all of this than, you know, most of the loudmouths on some of the social
media.
And
the other thing you do is when a person watches 72 hours of film a week, you can say what
back
you
it up.
And I've seen every player. That's the thing. I've seen every player, and I'm not watching highlights. The other thing I'd like to see Joe Brady do a better job of than Ken Dorsey. And, you know, again, no knock on Ken Dorsey. I don't know the man. I've met him once, I think, at a combine. I certainly don't know him. I'd like to see their run game and their pass game have better synchronicity, be married together better. You know, I think that, and that's one reason I've always been a believer in under center play action more than shotgun play action, because I think marry your run game and your pass game better.
In what regard? I know the people, I know what that means to me, but are you talking about making your play action looking more like run?
Yes.
And
yeah, because what you're trying to do to me with play action is what you're trying to do is you're trying to put players on defense in conflict, okay?
Right.
That's what you're trying to do. I mean, even defensive linemen, people never think about that. But let's say you are really good with outside zone and you have outside zone run action. What happens? You guys can speak to this. The D line moves laterally first, not vertically. That gives you an advantage in pass protection. There's another beat and fractions in football matter, as you guys know. But secondly, I think this is why someone like Kyle Shanahan is so good. He puts second level defenders in conflict, you know, because they have a run and a pass responsibility, and he plays with that. He toys with that. And I've always believed that the longer it takes to get to the mesh point, the more conflict you create. You know, to me, shotgun play action, for the most part, nothing's 100% in football, as you guys know, but for the most part, shotgun play action is that quick fake. You know, you're not really putting guys in conflict. you know, every once in a while you can. But, you know, to me, under center, which I call conventional play action, it just takes longer to get to the mesh point. The second level defenders have to kind of wait to see what it is. And while they're waiting to see what it is, receivers are running routes. And, you know, I just think that I'd like to see more of that in the context of the Bills.
And for everybody listening, the mesh point is when the quarterback takes a snap under center and he's moving backward while the running back is moving forward and you're faking the handoff at the mesh point.
But I also think, and it's something we're going to talk about here in a little bit, about last night's game, but I think that thing goes hand in hand what you talked about earlier with Josh as far as is he a precise or precision quarterback or a great athlete playing quarterback. I don't know if Josh, it's going to take a lot of work to get him to be that under center guy.
But I think that's something you can teach, Jerry.
Oh, I do too. I think you can too. I don't know if he wants to, so to speak. I think.
Right. And I don't know him and right. I wouldn't speak to any of that. It's like when people on shows, The people I do shows with every week would never ask me this, but every once in a while I'll do a show for a friend or whatever, and they say, you know, well, someone a great leader, and I say, guys, I can't answer that. I'd have to be in the locker room every day to know whether someone's a great leader. I can't answer that question. No, you know, and I'm totally honest about it. I can't answer that.
It's like when John and I played. The only time we were in shotgun was when it was a definite third down passing situation.
Right, and play action wasn't going to be a factor anyway.
Right.
Right, but I just think, you know, because, you know, what you're trying to do with defenders, I'm a big believer in scheme. I mean, I know that the game is matchups, and obviously there's always going to be matchups in football at every position. You know, you're an offensive lineman, you know, you're playing tackle, John, and you got a pass rushing DN, you know, you're matching up to him, okay? You got to block him, okay? There's matchups, but when it comes to, let's say, the pass game, and I know there's one-on-ones on the perimeter and teams play man, I get all that. You know, I've been doing this a long time. I know that. But I like to see the really nice schemes that get people open. That to me, is what coaching is. You know, it's easy to say, oh, we got, you know, Davante Adams, so we're just going to put him out there and he's going to win. Well, you know, yeah, can he win? Sure, he's Davante Adams. He's a great player. But to me, that's not – that to me is cop-out coaching.
Yep.
I don't disagree with you. There was a play in the second half of the game. I just watched it. All they did was leak Kelce behind. I don't know if it was
the blitz. Yeah, they ran it too. They ran both inside.
I'm just saying. Kelce just jogged a slow route right behind the receiver and then stopped. Oh. And it put our linebackers and our nickel corner in a position where they just couldn't get to him quickly enough because the wide receiver was just running him downfield.
Right.
And the whole point of that play was we're going to take 8 yards, and then our big guy can fall forward for three. And well, that's it.
I'll give you a great example, and then we can wrap up. You know, one thing, and they didn't necessarily know, I don't think, they were going to get a blitz, but the touchdown he threw to Cook for the first touchdown this week,
yeah,
I love that. That was four strong, okay? They started out in tight bunch, and Gilliam was number three in the bunch, and he went jet motion and then orbit motion back. So they ended up with four strong, which has become very prevalent in the league, something I love, because four strong is really hard to deal with if you're playing zone, because zones can't handle four guys to one side running routes. And they ended up running three verticals and what we call H-seam. It's all verts H-seam is basically what the play is. Cook was offset to the four strong side in the backfield, and he ran the H-seam, halfback seam for people so they understand what I'm saying.
Right.
It's halfback seam. Now, whether they knew they were going to get a blitz or not, only they know that, I don't, but they got a blitz. But the point is Sherfield went in motion, or maybe I'm confusing plays, but somebody went in motion. It might have been Sherfield. I can't remember every detail of the play. Actually, I've got my notes, and I can tell you in a second because I was watching it earlier today, obviously, because today's Monday. So I'll tell you in a sec because I do have my notes, and then I can tell you for sure. So it was Sherfield jet motion with the snap just before he crossed Allen in the gun, but the motion made it strong, four strong to the field. Three verticals concept with Sherfield, the swing outlet. Cook from offset backfield alignment ran H-seam as the middle vertical with linebacker Bolton and safety Edwards uncertain as to their coverage responsibilities behind the five-man pressure concept. And actually, Connor got in clean off the field edge, but the timing of the throw by Allen beat the beat him. But the point is the four strong caused them problems, caused Edwards and Bolton, and Bolton's a really good player, by the way, and a smart, savvy player, but it caused them problems because they were, first of all, they were short in coverage because of the pressure, but it just, they weren't sure how to react to it. And that's the kind of stuff I love, you know, the schematics to that, you know, they caught him. They got him. They got him with the play call.
Greg, I could see you with your cowboy remote running that let play back probably 10-15 times before you said, I got it. You know, I do the same thing when I prepare for our show.
The other play that was fourth strong was that Knox caught an 11-yarder in the first half. That was the one where that Gilliam went in jet then orbit motion. It was an 11-yarder to Knox in the first half. It wasn't, you know, a huge play in that sense, but they went four strong out of 21 personnel because I view Gilliam as a fullback the way they use him. But that also caused confusion in the Chiefs' zone match concept. And Knox, who was the original point man in the bunch, was wide open in the middle on the quick in-breaker, and it was 11 yards. And plays like that don't seem like a lot, guys, but you know how important plays like that are.
Yep.
Yeah. Sure. To me, that's a chunk play, anything over 7 yards, and I'm as an offensive lineman, I'm thrilled to the gills. Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Cosell, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, just hearing about what you do daily, your passion for the game, your dedication, and how much film you watch. I know Jerry and I are a little jealous, and sounds like things are growing there in Mount Laurel. And if you need applicants, maybe Jerry and I can take a load off with you, help out a little bit. But for my part, I just want to say, old friend, thank you so much. I've never forgotten the time I got to spend with you. And, you know, hopefully I'll get to see you live again soon. Jerry?
Greg, I appreciate you very much. I'll come up as long as you like give me a hoagie and a cheesesteak every week. I'm good to go, man. Let's do it.
There's hoagies and cheesesteaks all around here, Jerry. That's not an issue whatsoever.
I used to be a sucker to come up for a Yingling, but I can get that across the country now. So I just
That's right. It's local, but yeah, you can get those anywhere now. But a really good cheesesteak, you got to be in Philly.
Exactly. Yeah. Greg, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, I really appreciate it. Thanks. Maybe we'll do it again.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye now.
Holy Victory Monday. We had Greg Cosell on the show. Right.
Look,
how great is Greg Cosell, man?
Dude, that was awesome. Can we do this again? Joe, go on a trip. I want to talk about like all the other stuff too. Hey, real quick.
Joe's in like Tahiti or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real quick, before we get into last night's game, I had maybe had a little bit of a snafu to start. So real quick, I want to hit this I want to hear from our sponsor, Ficta Endon Elmer, real quick, and then we'll get into last night's game. Okay, Johnny? You good with that?
Okay. Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Picture this. Crystal clear vision without the hassle of glasses or contacts. Imagine watching Josh Allen's game-changing touchdowns with absolute clarity. At Ficta Endon Elmer Eye Care, we can make that a reality. Now, in a matter of seconds with Zeiss Smile technology, you can see clearly and get back to doing the things you love as soon as the next day. Visit us online at ficta.com and take our free self-test to see if you're eligible and schedule an evaluation. At Ficta Endon Elmer Eye Care, we are focused on you. Go Bills.
Who let the guy with ADD run in the show? Who did that?
I don't know. Who's that, me or you?
That's me.
Oh,
but anyway.
So when you broadcasted, it didn't go out?
No, it went out after I hit the stream button after a few minutes of you know. We're good, though, man. We're good.
We're good. We're good. Hey, that was great fun.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was a good get, and you need to get him on again because that was seriously, that was phenomenal.
You know what's fascinating about Greg, you know, having met him in his, you know, quasi dungeon at NFL Films all those years ago, is there's probably nothing changed about that office. There's that remote control, there's his TVs and his access, and you saw binders of notes all over his room, his office. And I just love his, you know, he's so even-handed in his opinion. You know, there's nothing personal about it. And it's crazy that I feel and you feel, and I think a lot of people on our particular network who talk a lot, Spence and Joe and Sarah and I, you know, as a group, you know, we share a lot of opinions, and to hear it more or less validated from a guy who's,
right,
you know, who has the time to watch 6 hours of film a day or 10 hours of film. It was brilliant.
All right, man, let's get into it. I feel I'm going to get, let's get into last night, man. Let's talk a little bit about the game last night.
Yeah, man. Look, I as much as I hate 3 years running, we have to play at Kansas City. I also feel like somehow it's good luck. I thought we were going to win. This game pretty much went by script from what I expected from Buffalo from the last freaking 10 games, right? Nothing right. surprised me. So I was just happy that when things got a little dark in the second half, we were able to put at least one drive together, right? Thrilled to come out of there with a victory. Nothing's fixed. Nothing's perfect. It's going to be a freaking boxing match next week. And I'm just happy to get the W. What do you think?
No, I mean, anytime, you know how it was, John, we talked about it all the time. Anytime you go in the hostile territory, especially in December, you're playing for something. The number one goal is to win. And I put it up there yesterday on the X app. You know, we used to say it all the time, a win is cash money. That means you're advancing, right?
Money.
You know, I'm all about the win, however it is. I don't care what it looks like. The thing that I liked about last night, before we get into the offensive line specifics and some of the stuff that we saw, because I know people have questions. And, hey, if you're in the comment section like Roy, Matt, Richard Rush, Mike Kingsley, all you guys, if you're in there, jump
Amanda,
in.
Amanda, Mimi, Tracy.
Amanda, Mimi, Tracy, if you jump on in with some comments, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, you want to hop over to Facebook – or not Facebook. You want to hop over to YouTube and get in on the comments. But, you know, it's one of those things where – the way they competed, I mean, from the quarterback down, I mean, it was one of those physical games. It was an ugly game. I mean, Josh was, you know, he might miss the obvious completion, but then he makes the circus play on the sideline. I mean, all the way down to the coaching staff, you could feel the intensity of that group. They wanted that game. They wanted that game because of what went on that week with their head coach. I said it last night. There, show me a team that I mean, that team wants to play for McDermott. They want to play for him. They want to win games. They want to do all those things. They showed a lot of guts last night, a lot of character. And I could give a rat's what it looked like. They won the game. That's all that matters. Now on the next week, and let's get another one, because I think now we need 8 in a row. We needed 9. Now we need 8.
Yep. That's right. Jerry, a couple of thoughts have been popping into my mind when I was watching the second half again. I get annoyed when they talk about genius coaches and crap like that, but I got to give a nod to Spagnuolo, because he schemed the living hell out of that defense up front. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we approach the offensive line play. But I'm curious, why does the right guard always signal with the hand the ready for the snap? Why is the right guard looking back at the quarterback when he's a rookie, and the left guard, who's a little bit more seasoned veteran, could do the same damn thing? I think that it might be a little challenging for Torrance to do that right now.
I believe the reason they do it is a dominant eye thing, I would imagine. I would imagine Mitch Morse, his dominant eye is his right eye. Therefore, he could see better with his right eye than now, like Mr. Cosell said earlier, we're not in the locker room, man. So we don't know for sure. But it's always the right guard. Right.
It seems like it's always the right guard.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's a dominant eye thing. And I say that just as a, you know, I think Torrance is playing great as a rookie, but I think you always want to position people for success. And I don't know if that.
He's a little shaky last night. We'll get into that.
No, for sure. For sure. But that, again, you played at Arrowhead. You remember. I mean, you can't hear a thing.
I totally know.
And you played tackle too. So you know what it's like to try to watch the ball out of the what was your the corner of your left eye, and keep your right eye on that freaking all-pro defensive end that was about stepping up field on you and clubbing you, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's truly a very challenging thing. And I thought maybe, God, if the left guard did it, maybe, you know, Torrence would feel a little bit more comfortable. Because when you're looking back and I'm a defensive tackle, I'm going to be moving.
Yeah. I remember, and that first happened. I don't know if you remember this or not. I'm playing center, and we go to New England, and we're still looking between the legs for the leg to come up, the shotgun snap. And when you looked in between your legs and you look back up, I can feel Ruben's hitting me on the thigh, and I'm like, what? And I look up, and the whole defense has changed. They would change the defense after you looked under. So that's where the whole thing with the hand and all that came from. So, smart. No, I get I get it. I mean, it's there's nothing you could do in that noise, but just try to.
And that's why you said a win. We got the win, right?
Well, I mean, there's one of the greatest stories in the history of Bills folklore happened at Arrowhead with Will Wolford. I will never forget that whole the time that Will Wolford changed. Why did he change his jersey number? Yeah. Do you remember that story?
Oh, yeah. Derek Thomas changed it for him.
Exactly. So,
and you know what? I mean, the guy's a legend, but that was a rough game for Will.
Exactly. Exactly.
But you know what? I had a rough game. You had a rough game. We all had a rough – I mean, you can't suit up and be perfect. No chance.
And I think Bob has a good point. How many snaps does it take to read that count? You got to work with it. We used to do the – you know, you'll see people do the secondhand motion – you two leg raises, all that stuff. You try to mess with it. The rule we always had was once the quarterback calls for the ball can come anytime after that. It doesn't have to be right away. It can be delayed, you know, and you try to mess with it. But then when you hold on to it too long at center and John Fina jumps off sides and he's giving you an earful in the huddle, then you usually tend to snap it as quick as you can.
Yeah, speaking of jumping off sides, Juwan Taylor, give me a break. That guy's helmet isn't anywhere near the crack of the center's ass. And that guy twitches. That guy twitches like he is coming off an addiction. I mean, he's shaking out there. I'm telling you, this is insane. In the 90s, if we moved like that along the line of scrimmage, there'd be laundry everywhere.
Oh, that guy's backing
his butt. He's moving his – forget it. That's snap simulation.
But so, the thing is that, I mean, we've already made 99% of the rules for the offense. Why do we have to make 100% of the rules for the offense? I mean, it even goes into last night with the whole offsides call on Tony. I guarantee you he's probably lined up that way most of the season.
You know what, Jerry, Mimi, put it in the comments. The guy lined up outsides. I saw so much of it on Twitter today. This is a non-versation.
No, exactly. It is a non-versation.
And we agree. We did not get a break. They committed an error.
Right.
It's not a break. We didn't get away with anything. They finally decided to flag it.
It is nice to see that, you know, Big Red for the most part, and then Patty. Came to their senses today, and Patrick for sure apologized for his behavior, especially apologizing to Josh Allen, how he acted after the game when he went up to see Josh. So obviously he gets on the X app and seen the public outcry.
Yeah, good for him. I forgive him. All right, let's talk. We don't have a lot of time, Jerry. We had a great time with Greg Cosell, but, you know, there were a number of things that people lash out on the offensive line, so let's deal with it right now. Second half, I watched it. You watched it. Take away from your notes. The first drive of the second half, 3rd and 12 became 3rd and 7, and then Torrence had a mental error.
Yes.
Tell us.
He had a couple of busts last night, and when I say that, MAs or mental missed assignments, he slid wrong. He slid the wrong way. You could see he was a bit confused, and this goes with what John was saying earlier about, are we giving this rookie too much? The other thing that people need to realize, and this happens every year to these guys, these dudes have already played like 6 more games or whatever than they're usually normally playing as a college senior or a college football player. So there is a bit of a wall that the rookies hit during the season just because it is so long. But no, he had two missed assignments last night, slid the wrong way. I did not see the Bills particularly trying to slide to Chris Jones every play. They left Chris Jones on an island, but I also think that Spags, the DC over in Kansas City, did a really good job of getting him one-on-one with certain people. They had him one-on-one with Spencer Brown some. He had some success over McGovern. Some of the stuff was iffy. I thought Josh might have held the ball too much or was running pylon drills back there instead of throwing the ball away. There were a few times we got beat just blatantly. The missed assignments need to not happen. But No, I think Spags did a really good job scheming us up.
And you know what comes with time for all those listening? When you play offensive line at this level, your film study and your playbook study becomes incredibly important. So I've said it a number of times. When we played, we took a test on Saturday morning and we reviewed it on Saturday night. And we had to pick up the assignments, the blitzes. And not only did we have to block our position, we had to block every position on the right. offensive line, the running backs and the tight end. And I think, you know, it got to the point where, no offense, Jerry, but, you know, between me and Ruben and the other guys, when you were playing center, you making a call became more of an exercise of it's something you have to do. But I already knew my right. responsibility. Right. And I knew if the linebackers moved over, you'd be changing the call, and I would just change my technique right. or my responsibility right. as it was. So, frankly, that's going to come with age. But the beautiful thing is the guy's like a pyramid, right? He's got a great base, and right now with the experience that he's getting, you know, it's going to become even stronger and grow even taller.
Go ahead. I was going to say, do you want to hit this one real quick? I know we don't have much time, but Mike Kingsley asked, how does a defense dictate whether a lineman gets a one-on-one matchup? By a lineman, they study – go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, they study us just as we study them. So right. formations for them reveal the – our formations will reveal to Spagnuolo what type of protection we'll use in some instances, right? Right. And if they're good at it and they got a lot of people studying film and they create tons of analytics, then in certain places on the field, the Bills are 70% likely on the right hash mark between the 35s to line up a tight end there, blah, 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 and run these types of protections.
Right.
So in that instance, you're going to put Chris Jones on the right guard. In this instance, we're going to put him on the left guard. And what's really cool, and I hate to say it that way, is a guy like that being able to rush a tackle and then you can move different people yeah. into positions. It gives you so much versatility. The fact remains that we looked worse as an offensive line, not because of us, but because the combination of the offensive line, yes. missed assignment by the running back. Josh should have thrown a couple of balls away. And, when you're blocking as a tackle, we see this all the time. It happened to Spencer Brown last week, I think. I'm taking my guy deep, Jerry, like we like to. We're at about 9 yards. And then all of a sudden, the guy reverses field, and he starts heading back to the line of scrimmage. Now, I can hold him and run the risk of a flag, or I can let him go. And if the quarterback is moving his way up into the pocket, and I let him go, and it's a sack, that ain't on the 70s. That's on the teens, right? That's Josh's right. slack. We had one of those. That play, I think, God, we had 6 seconds, and Josh held and held and waited and waited. It was 3rd and 27, and that sack is on him. The third drive, which was awful, screen right. The Kincaid got held, and then 3rd and 10 – looked like the offensive line blew. Latavius Murray supposed to fill between the right guard yep. and right tackle.
He fit wrong.
And instead he makes his read to the A gaps, gets himself out of position, can't recover, boom, sack. And then the other sack, by the way, or the other pressure was a spy guy coming
yes.
late in the game, right?
Yeah.
So our protection wasn't perfect. Josh scrambles sometimes when he oughtn't. And when you scramble at depth, you're always going to see pressure right. from the backside because that guy's running an arc. And on the play side, that guy's going to disengage from the tackle and give pursuit.
And but, I don't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Not great play by the O-line. Go ahead.
I don't know what kind of hold Josh has on being able to change the protection, but there was a couple times we slid to a two-man side. Yeah, and they brought three or four to the, and it was like, it was just, to me, the communication was really off. I thought Spagnuolo did a wonderful job. Like, for instance, in the middle one time, they had Chris Jones over McGovern, and then they had the other defensive tackle over Torrance, and they lined them up in either twos to ones, and the reason being, they knew that if you're going to slide protect, one of the things they teach you as an offensive lineman is you kind of, if your guy's wider, you don't have to leave so quick. So I can kind of play two ways. I can stick my inside hand out and help this guy while I'm eventually going to go help this guy. Well, putting those two in ones like that, Mitch had to go, man. Like, he didn't have time to jack around because he's got a gap. Well, as soon as he leaves, Chris Jones blows up field. That was that one he got on McGovern early, when McGovern seemed to catch his leg and kind of was down for a minute in the first half. So, again, great coaching. They did a wonderful job there. So I felt that, I didn't think that we ever – I don't think it was such a big-time mismatch. It's just we just got beat up. I think we had some issues with missed assignments and understanding where we needed to go with what pressure was being shown. You know, Spagnuolo did a really good job of showing some phantom stuff where, you know, we're going to come here, those guys bail, and the other side comes. You know, stuff we deal with all the time.
Did you catch that game in the second half that they ran over on Dawkins and McGovern's side? It was freaking awesome. It was a delay game. The three or two technique took McGovern inside. Dion's setting out on the lines on the defensive end, who slow plays him, and then the linebacker from depth creeping instead of coming to take coming to the quarterback, he goes and picks Dion, and that puts the running back in a bind, and the defensive end rolled in. Man, I watched that thing like four times. It was freaking poetry. This is a brilliant game.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was a great job. It was, I thought Spagnuolo did a wonderful job last night. I just think that the biggest thing for us in the second half, John, and I wanted your opinion on this. You know, we're doing some different things. We've really gotten good at running dart, and now we're running dart to both sides. And what I mean by dart is it's that spread concept counter run where we're not pulling guards, we're just pulling that tackle. They usually do it with Dion. Last night, Spencer did it and did a really good job with it. And I think eventually you'll see us building some play action off of that. But, why did we go away from – it seemed like early in the fourth or whatever, late in the third quarter, we kind of abandoned the run and went back to, as Greg was talking about earlier, the run pass mesh left us, and we just started running plays instead of running those mesh-type things between run and pass. And then all the, because we were having success running the ball. I think that was another issue. We didn't stay with the run. We kind of bailed from it too early.
Yeah. I mean, love or hate Tony Romo, if you will, but at times he has the most incredible insights until, the drive where we ended up kicking the field goal, actually the one before it, we hadn't run the ball in 10 plays. Right. And, that dart play, I like to call it zone revert. So you run zone left, but the guy on the far left, Deion Dawkins, comes across the line. So that play's been working extremely well. We did have some angle blocking, some people call pin and pull, and we had great luck with that. But what really killed me was the bunch grouping runs inside the tackles. And I've been seeing it for 3 years now. Gabe Davis might be handsome, but he can't block inside the tackles. Stop doing it. We line up two tight ends. We bring all these people into the box, and none of them could do the math, and none of them can nut up like they need to because that ain't what they do for a living, right?
Right.
So we started running a little bit of that bunch in the second half, and I'm like, why are you going away from what worked? This dart or the zone revert, as I like to call it. Start getting and James Cook does such a nice job with the jump cuts, getting out in space. Well, and the last thing, what Greg was saying, what Greg was saying, why in the hell isn't our play action look a hell of a lot more like our running game? And right. and instead of doing that, we were on a lot of first and second down throwing that screen, which worked early, but they were picking up on it, Jerry.
I think that going back to the running game with Cook a little bit, I think we got two things going for us. We're doing a really good job, even on the inside zone, of sealing off the backside three. We're able to jump behind the center, jump behind that backside guard because, A, we're doing a good job there sealing off, and then, B, Josh holds everybody on the outside. Nobody can sell out and crash inside because Josh will pull the ball and he's around the end. I think that some of the screen game we ran early is good. We tried to change up the blocking. We ran it out of a stretch look. We ran it out of that. We actually did kind of, I think we ran a screen where we ran stretch one way and tried to screen back the other. And we ran traditional screen blocking and they were blowing it up. I mean, they figured it out, especially later in the game when you could tell that Brady was trying to get the ball to Diggs any way he could. And some of those looks, I'm sure just, you know, Spagnuolo saw coming from a mile away. I do like the screen game. I'm not a huge wide receiver screen guy. I'd rather run it to the Cooks. But, you know, we did a really good job hitting perimeter stuff early. They took it away from us. But I just would have liked to have seen us go back to that run game and really try to pound the ball and control the clock.
Yep, I agree. Overall, Jerry, I think your comments are spot on. You go into a place like Kansas City, they're coming off a loss. You want to get out of there surviving with a W, with minimal injuries. I'm not sure what AJ Epenesa's wrist injury looks like. I don't know what Micah Hyde's injury looks like, but I think by and large, we got out of there healthy and we get to reload against the Cowboys.
Exactly. And it's going to be another big day for our defense, which, by the way, I know we were off tackle. Props to our defense. I thought they did a great job up front of getting after Mahomes. And the other thing they did really well, except for like one scramble for a first down, they kept him in the pocket. We ran a lot of stunts where we would get Groot would run underneath and we would have our inside defensive tackles loop outside to keep contained. We did a really good job keeping spies on him, keeping him in the pocket. And that, to me, that's not what he really likes. And if I was going to play Josh Allen, I'd do the same thing. But I thought they did a good job as well.
And I paid a lot of attention to the passing scheme of Kansas City, and they just do some really smart stuff, just some very basic stuff. We want to get 6 yards here, want to get 8 yards there. You know, they're really smart offensively. I'd like to see, hopefully Joe Brady breaks that film down. And, you know, it to me, it's all about situational plays, right? If we need 4 yards, what are our top three plays? But how are we going to scheme the guy to get open? And right. Again, we're over time, Jerry. You know, it's long in the tooth. You are great. Thanks for sitting in for Joe Miller. Well, thank you for everybody in the comments section. You can download this anywhere you get your favorite podcast. You can go back and watch it on YouTube if you dare. And we had a great time. What do you got, Jerry?
I was going to say, I wasn't perfect, but I was all right. I appreciate you having me on. I enjoy doing the show with you, man. Thanks to all of our listeners. Thanks for checking in. Hit the like button, subscribe button as always. Joe will be back next week, so you can hear his velvety voice. John will be back as well. Sarah and I will be on Wednesday night at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, the line to gain. We'll talk more about the game this week. We'll talk about that Cowboys matchup coming up. So once again, thanks, everybody. As always, go Bills.
Hey, man, go Bills!
Thanks, fellas. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.